Hi, my name is Rafael, and I'm an alcoholic.
Rafael.
And I'm a two-fisted drinker. You guys identify with that?
Yes.
You know, thank you, Mark, for letting me participate in my sobriety. You know, it's always an honor and a privilege. Anytime that I'm able to do anything for Alcoholics Anonymous, out of gratitude alone. You know, I know that I have a debt to Alcoholics Anonymous that I will never, ever be able to repay. To take a drunk like me, that I don't know that I suffer from an illness called alcoholism. Welcome, Shane and Sarah. Where are you guys at? There we go. Hi, Sarah. I've known you guys for a long, long time. You know, to take a drunk like me that I don't know that I suffer from an illness called alcoholism. You know, my thing is that when I begin to drink, I can't stop, you know. And I just love that feeling that two drinks gives me, you know, just like that, where it puts me at that place where I'm not illegal, where I don't have holes in my shoes, where I'm not that five-year-old kid that can't speak English, that my mother's taking me to school and telling me, mijo, if they ask you where you were born, you tell me you were born here. They're going to deport me, you see? So at a very young age, I learned how to lie. And I was always very uncomfortable within myself. And this is before I ever drank. There was just something different about me, you know? I remember being in kindergarten, sitting there Indian style. I'm the second oldest of seven kids. My mother brought my brother Joe and I here to the United States when I was one. And he was 2 1/2. My father had gone to prison in Mexico for stealing cattle. My father, the horse thief. I just buried him two years ago. Promise not to get emotional tonight. So he gets out of prison. He comes to the United States, grabs my mother. We're living outside of Ramona Garden Project right there in East LA, Boyle Heights. And we go back to Mexico. You know, my father was a really, really bad drinker. He was very violent, very abusive. It was very common for me to come home and watch my dad whip my mom with a pistol. And I used to tell myself at 4 or 5, I don't ever, ever want to grow up to be like him. And the truth of the matter is, because of my alcoholism, in a lot of ways, I grew up to be just like him. Grew up just like him. So my mother leaves him again. She comes here to the United States again, and now I'm about 4 or 5, and I start going to school. And it was just always different. We used to travel in the Tres Estrellas. I don't know if you guys ever know the Tres Estrellas bus. Someone's smiling, the Mexicanos here. So the Tres Estrellas is like the third-rate Greyhound, right? And we used to take it from Guadalajara, because I'm from a town called Chapala, which is about 20 kilometers south of Guadalajara. And that thing would take 3 nights, 2 days, or 3 days, 2 nights. Did I say that right? Yeah, something like that. And they had 2 drivers, and they just drive around the clock, right? And you go, and then you travel, and it's dark, and then you see, like, this little light out, like, in the way over there. And then the light gets bigger, then the bus gets there. It looks like dirt roads. The only thing that's missing is the chickens up on top, you know, right? And you're getting there, you know. And I was scared, and it was different. And then I remember getting to Tijuana, and it was a little bit bigger town. And then we stayed there the night or two. Then we got across. Well, they smuggled us across somehow, yeah. And then we took the bus at night, the Greyhound bus, from San Diego, San Isidro, to downtown L.A. And I remember downtown L.A., all the lights, you know, that glimmers, like, oh, it just seemed exciting. It seemed nice. And, I used to go to Murchison Street School there, right? And no grass, all blacktop. My mother, you know, 2 kids by herself, trying to raise 2 kids. No, my brother Gustavo was born, so it was 3 now this time. My brother Gustavo was born, so he was 3 of us. You know, my dad, I don't know where the heck he was off. He stayed back in Mexico, probably went back to prison for another stint. And so I used to be real rough on my shoes. Real hard, right? So I used to wear holes in my shoes, right? And I would put pieces of cardboard in them. I love you, Bev. And 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 I put pieces of cardboard in them, and you sit Indian style, and the teacher's reading to you there, and there was this little girl that I don't even remember her name, but I'll never forget what she said. Look at Raphael, he has holes in his shoes. And that shit just messed with me. It just messed with me. And when I painted, it's just my upbringing. You know, I always felt less than. You know, we lived in the, it wasn't even a garage. It was like a house, and then it was like a bottom place where you would park the car underneath. And a little thing, you know, would, I remember seeing mice and all that stuff, right? But that's what my mother could afford, you know, and I always felt less than. And so as we go on through the years, my father comes back, you know, and he's working at a golf course, and we used to go to Pasadena from Boyle Heights, East L.A., and my dad used to mow lawns, you know, and I remember being 7, 8 years old, 6 years old now, and I always pushed the lawnmower, you know, and I was always working. I've always worked. Then he got a farm, and he started butchering pigs, cows, goats, and cattle, you know, like he did in Mexico. That's what he did, and we sold them. We made carnitas, and we sold beer, and then they would have the mariachi come out, the conjunto come out, and singing, and I was great. But my dad's drinking just kept on getting worse and worse, and I said, I'm never, ever going to grow up to be like him, ever, you know. Finally, I went to 16 different schools by the time I got to high school, 16 different schools. I've always been a big kid. I've actually shrunk a couple inches in my old age, and yeah. And, yeah, wow. Oh my God, I lost my train of thought. See what happens as you get older? You know, and so I always felt different. And I'll never remember. I got to Silmar High School now. You know, I live with my dad. My mother came up to me and said, Mijo, I can't take out. Now there's 7 of us. Years have gone by, now there's 7. And I'm the second oldest, right? And my mother says, I'm going to take your older brother, Joe. And you and your brother Gustavo, which are right, you know, in age to Joe, and I'm going to take the younger 4. There's 7 of us. He's going to help. You guys are going to stay with your dad. God, my dad. I said, damn. So at 12, 13 years old, I learned how to drive in that ranch and stuff. And I used to drive my dad to the bars there on Valley Boulevard in the City of Industry in La Puente. And then we used to, I learned how to count money. And this counting money is going to come really, really handy in my next career. You know? My next career is drinking involved from the get-go. That's the only way I could get the fall courage. Anyway, so my dad would go to this auction in Chino, and he would buy animals, and they used to like front them the animals. Like he paid half, and then he owed half of them, you know, and he had bills to pay. And we, at that time in the 70s, this is in the 70s, I was born in 66, so I'm about 12, 13, so this is 79, you know, about 79. And I learned how to lie. Remember, you guys, I told you I learned how to lie from a little kid. Well, man, I became the liar with the best of them. You know, my dad would be drinking and stuff, and I knew that if I gave him all that money we sold at the ranch, he was going to go right up there with the ficheras, you know, in the Mexican bars, and they're going to take all his money till he was on and send him on his way. It never failed. So I learned to hold back money. You know, back then we were selling $1,200, $1,300 on a Friday, Saturday, and a Sunday. And I learned how to hold back the money because he had bills to pay. I go, Dad, you know, we didn't have a good day. We didn't sell a lot. And he goes, what do you mean? You know, we butchered 2 steers and a pig and we sold them. Pendejo, te hicieron menso, you know. He's just screaming at me in Spanish. I mean, dummy, they took advantage of you. And I had money in my pocket. Come Monday, when all the bills were due and he go back to that livestock on Tuesdays, he would have to pay. He owed. And he had money. So I learned how to lie. For me to lie was just second nature. I could look at you straight in the face and convince you that what I was telling you was a lie, but I could convince you it was the truth. And that came really, really good when I started dealing drugs. Shit. Anyway, so I lived with my dad for a couple years. Me and Gustavo did, you know, and one day I need to share this because my dad will come back in the picture. And I come home, I had this car, I paid like $300 or $400 from an Oldsmobile, and he had beat my brother pretty bad in the drunken stage, you know. And I always felt that it was my job to protect my little brother. And I always been a big kid, I could, handled myself pretty well. I wasn't a tough guy, but I learned how to get by, you know. And I stood up to him, and he beat me like a grown man. And I remember I told him I wished him dead. I told him he was a drunk. I told him everything that he should die of. And I hadn't even drank yet. 14. By this time, my mother had moved up to Sylmar. I go knock on the door. And I said, Mom, we don't have anywhere to go. Gustavo and I are here. And Dad beat me. I'm beat up pretty bad. And, you know, she's, come on in. She's our mother, right? So we stayed there. So I went to Sylmar High School. I started going to Sylmar High School, and I started playing football. And I became, like, really good at football, right? I was in 10th grade. I made a varsity team. And then I'll remember that one night after a football game, my friend Mike Anderson worked at the Pasta Michi right there, and he had to set up where they were going to give us some pizza and some beer. And I remember eating some pizza and having two cold Budweisers. And that was my first experience with the effect produced by alcohol. The effect produced by alcohol that it does to an alcoholic. Because I hadn't drank myself to alcoholism, but I had the ism, you see? Because if I did something for you, I wanted the whole world to know what a great, nice, wonderful guy I was. You know, when I got sober, I remember my sponsor, Bill. Mark remembers my sponsor, Bill. I came up here with Bill back when you guys were on Avenue S. That was new, you know, or a year or two sober. And I remember Bill, I would call him, Bill. And I was at the San Fernando group. Ronnie was there. The San Fernando group. This is 1994. That's my sobriety date, January the 20th, 1994. I've been sober 30 years. Can you guys believe that? 30 years for a drunk like me that couldn't go 15 minutes without drinking. That's a pretty good deal. I think so. For a drunk like me, give me a life beyond my wildest dreams. Really, it has. And I'm not trying to be corny about it. It's just the truth. But I remember that I used to call Bill and said, Hey, Bill, I helped so-and-so move, and I mopped the floors at the San Fernando Hall. They smoke. I don't smoke, but I cleaned the ashtrays. And he would stop me mid-sentence. Kid, it doesn't count. I go, what do you mean it doesn't count, Bill? He says, you told somebody. Figure that one out. I want everybody to know what a great, wonderful guy I am. My sponsor wouldn't even give me that. And he didn't ask me if I believed in God or I didn't believe in God. He said, kid, you're very undisciplined. And the fact that you're very undisciplined, and I used to ask myself, how is he so wise, you know? Thank you, Miley. Because Bill was sober 27 years when he started sponsoring me. And he said, you're very undisciplined. And the fact that you're very undisciplined, you're going to hit your knees on a daily basis. Really? What do you mean? Yeah. You know that couch you're sleeping on, your mom, that you're bumming off your mom? You don't have a car. You don't have a job. You don't have a girlfriend. Yeah, Bill, but you don't understand. I used to run with the Guzman cartel, man. I used to make $60,000 a week. And, you know, and right before that, I had owed them $3.5 million. And they didn't shoot me. Can you believe that? I met up with them, but they didn't shoot me. And I used to tell Bill, try to tell him what a tough guy I was. Sleeping on my mother's couch, without a job, without a car, without a girlfriend. And I always had girls. Because when I was making $60,000 a week, man, I had Ferraris, Porsches, Corvettes, dually trucks, racehorses, ranches, and women everywhere. That was my identity, you know, in a pocket full of money. You know, I used to get those counting machines and they'd go around the night. Three counting machines. They didn't count the denomination of the bill. They just told you it was 100 bills. So you go, 100 hundreds, 10,000. 100 fifties, 5,000. 100 twenties, 2,000. And you start getting these stacks. And you start, you know, moving into millions of dollars. For a poor kid from East LA that had holes in his shoes, a pocket full of money, booze around the clock, and a, you know, bag full of cocaine. You know, and I just started doing it. And that false courage. I jump on the plane with 10 kilos of cocaine. I go to Las Vegas and get rid of them. And I make money. And then I start getting people doing it. I go to Demi, New Mexico, which the other side is Paloma, Chihuahua. And I get 100 kilos of cocaine. I pull them in that truck and that antenna's down. I don't know if it was right or wrong. I just knew the antenna was down. And when the antenna went up, I didn't know if the radar was on or off. I just take off in that truck. And I cross it over, and I get paid. Then I start doing my own shit. I start making big time money. It's like the movies. I started to hate myself. I can't stand to look at myself. I know that I'm a fraud. I'm a fake. I'm a liar. I'm a cheat and a thief. And I'm not going to go ask God to guide me or direct me or ask for forgiveness. I'm going to go to a witchcraft doctor. So by this time, you know, my drinking starts to progress. It starts getting worse. I forgot to tell you that I was an all-city, well, that's Eagle, right? I was an all-city football player, defensive player of the year for the Valley, scholarship to go play everywhere in the country, but it was a dark secret. I was illegal. So when I knew that legal, I went and asked that uncle that has the landing strips in Mexico that the planes land to unload. I asked him for a job. And he started paying me $100 for every kilo of cocaine that I delivered and $100 for every kilo of cocaine that I stored. I said, man, this guy's using me. He's my uncle. I do my own deals. And that's how I started making my money. Bad money. So, you know, my drinking gets, and it's starting to get worse and worse and worse. I suffer from an illness that is progressive. And the fact that it's progressive, it makes it a killer disease. I ran with a lot of people that were a lot smarter than I was, a lot nicer, a lot better looking, and they're either locked up for life or they're buried. You know, and just the other day we had a newcomer come into the San Fernando group, and he was sharing that, you know, he knew this guy named Danny. And I said, wow, and I knew Danny, you know. Danny went to prison for life, and I came into Alcoholics Anonymous in 1994. That God that I didn't believe, I know that there's a purpose for me in life today. That's to stay sober and help another alcoholic achieve sobriety. My sole purpose. I need Alcoholics Anonymous more today than I ever have in the 30 years of my sobriety. Let me get back to that witchcraft doctor, because you guys are going to laugh at me, and I like it. Because today I take myself not too seriously, because I'm grateful. So I go to this witchcraft doctor, and before you guys get this, I used to pay this guy thousands of dollars for these services. Thousands, not hundreds, thousands of dollars. And I would always go there after I'd been drinking for about 3 or 4 days around the clock. And that was me. I did other stuff so I could drink around the clock. And then I'd pass out. And the house could be burning or whatever could be on fire. And when I come to, I pick up from the bottle, because I was a bottle drinker. I just like to pull that son of a gun. I just like to pull. I like to pull it and watch it. And you see that thing come down my throat and that ease and comfort that it gives me. The problem is that I have a physical allergy. And it started messing with me that it started going down and it started coming up green and yellow. And there was many a times that I would just please stay in there. I get 2 cold beers because I wanted to stay in there long enough in my body to give me that effect that just gets me to ah. You see? So I could get some food in me so I could go back to the bottle and just pull it. My body was just rejecting it. Then I had that mental obsession, you know, where I take that first drink and that drink takes me. And nothing is more important than staying drunk. I don't care if I got to steal from Jimmy or what I got to do. I'm going to do whatever I need to do to stay loaded. And I get that spiritual malady that comes, that soul sickness that sickens me from the inside, you know, that I can't stand who I am. I look at that mirror and I go, what a fake. What a fraud. So I go to this witchcraft doctor. And I'm feeling like crap. And he had this black cast iron pot. Right? And he had these sticks in there. And he always had a live chicken. Always had a live chicken. He says, you have to cut the head off the chicken. I grew up, man. At 12 years old, when I couldn't knock down those 750, 800-pound pigs, I shoot them with a 22 right in the forehead. Then I run and I stab them right in the heart. And when you stab them in the heart, the pig, not the steer or the cow or the goat, but the pig, you stab them in the heart, all your meat comes out nice and white. You know, when you skin them, my dad taught me that. You know, I love my dad today. You know, I take him flowers every Wednesday, whether I like it or not. And I say, Dad, you're in a better place. And it wasn't always like that. But because Alcoholics Anonymous, it's been like that, at least for 2 years. Anyway, so this witchcraft doctor's got that cast iron pot, right? And he says, cut off the head off the chicken. The head off the chicken like nothing, right? Then he starts splashing me with that chicken blood. Now I'm butt naked. And I didn't always, like, I wasn't always like this, man. I mean, you take a drunk like me, man, I don't bathe for 2 or 3 days, you know what I mean? My bathe is to jump in on that side of the pool, because I still have money, and get out of this side of the pool, and that's as much as I'm going to do about brushing teeth. Nah, you kidding me? So I go there, and I rip the insides out of that chicken, and I throw it in there, and he's got that Romero, and he's whipping me around. And he's, I don't know what he said, something. I had to chant something. I don't remember. This was a long time ago. This was over 30 years ago. I haven't gone to a witchcraft doctor since I've been sober. Scout's honor. I have a God of my understanding today. So I go to this witchcraft doctor, right? And he then, this is the clincher for all alcoholics, right? He always had a bottle of beef eaters. And he would say, take a swig. Well, I like to pull it. I could take that swig. He says, don't swallow. He says, gargle it. Gargle it. Gargle it. And spit it out at this black cast iron pot with the insides of the chicken, the head of the chicken, the feathers of the chicken. And I don't know where the other chicken went. Anyway, but it's all in there. Why, hell, I'm a drunk. I ain't spit nothing out. I'm swallowing. Remember, I'm that alcoholic that you give me 2 drinks, 2 pulls, and I get to that, where I could stand myself, where I could look at myself. That's what alcohol does for me. Give me a few drinks and have the effect produced by alcohol. I could look at myself in the mirror, and I could continue to lie with me. You know, circumstances, you know, your dad went to prison. You know, you bought your mother a house. You raised your younger brothers. You did all this with this illegal money. I could justify it with 2 drinks in me. The problem is, I don't know how to stop at 2 drinks. Any of you do? I don't. I take 1 drink. My drinking took me to where I end up at the curb and my pants are wet. How many of you have ever peed your pants? Is it a nice warm sensation when you do first do it? I like it. It's after that the air hits it, and you start getting a little crusty. Give me a swig, I'll pull the swig out of it. I'll pee my pants again. What the heck? We have a guy that comes into our group now, you know, and we practice the love and tolerance. Remember, love and tolerance of other people is our code here. It doesn't say love and tolerance of Ralph, love and tolerance of Raphael. It says love and tolerance of other people is our code here. This guy comes in here and he just reeks. And he grabs donuts and coffee, he makes a mess. And I see a man with 36 years of sobriety. 36 or 37, Ronnie? 36 years of sobriety. Get there before that guy gets there, makes the coffee, and cleans up the mess from those donuts. See? That's the humility that I'm working. Because I want to tell you how great and wonderful I am. And I'm going to tell you. It's going. But I need to get current with you and tell you what happened. So I go to AA meeting. I'm sober about 6 months. I haven't drank. My sponsor, Bill, is taking me through the big book of alcoholics. What's that book at? I want to show you guys. Check this out. You see this book right here? This is the first edition of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. 7 printing, but the reason that this has such significant meaning to me, because this is my sponsor's book that died when I was 18 years sober, and he died with 44 years of sobriety. This was his book that he took me through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and he would tell me things When I had lost all that money and I didn't have two nickels to put together, and he'd buy me a cup of coffee after the meeting, and he'd buy me a hamburger because I was hungry, and I had money to eat, and he would say, "Kid, don't ever, ever forget to do this for another alcoholic." Now, if I've done something right here in the 30 years that I've been here in Alcoholics Anonymous, besides not take a drink, because that's our singleness of purpose, not take a drink, is that I have never, ever forgotten to take another alcoholic through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Sure, my experience, strength, and hope, as Bill shared it with me. That's the gift here. Remember that in order for a lake to be clear and calm, in nice clear waters, it has to have an inflow and an outflow. If not, it gets murky, the waters get choppy, and they get muddy. So what I like to say that when I'm one with you and I'm one with God, I'm going to be okay. I don't want to go. I need to tell you what happened, how I met this beautiful young lady that I married, that I just buried two months ago, the mother of my kids. I don't want to break down here because I'm a tough guy. Guys, don't cry. I was brought up since a kid. You get your ass kicked, you get up, and you keep fighting. You know, people that I ran with, they put that pistol to your head, you said, pull it. And a couple other choice words, you know. That's the way I was brought up. I came without any feelings to you in Alcoholics Anonymous. The week before I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous, I was crawling on my belly with an AK-47 because they were going to come get me. You see? I came in here and I go, if you guys knew the places that I've been and the things I've done, you wouldn't let me in here. You guys just practice that love and tolerance of other people and that signalness of purpose. You gave me half a cup of coffee, Scotty. Half a cup of coffee, so let me sit down and listen, kid. And I did that. And everything was slow. And I wanted to tell you how bad and awesome I was. And people, your lips are moving again. Listen, that was my sponsor. I go, hey, Bill, you don't understand, man. I did this. Hey, kid, your lips are moving. And he would go, hey, kid. He used to call me kid. I was young. I was 27. I'm 57 now. And he go, hey, kid, you know the best thing about telling the truth? I go, what is, Bill? What's the best thing about telling the truth? You don't have to remember what you said yesterday. It just is. Right? And that's what Alcoholics Anonymous does in teaching us how to live one day at a time, how not to drink one day at a time, and getting down to the causes and conditions of my drinking, why I drank, all those insecurities I had, all the selfishness, self-centeredness, the dishonesty, the self-seeking motives, all that crap that I come here, all that baggage that I do inventory, and I share it with Bill. And I'm sharing it with Bill with 30 men at an AA retreat up in the Anza Borrego. No, this was Ottawa. We used to go Anza Borrego, then Ottawa. You know, we go every 6 months. We were up in the Ottawa. You know how come I know it was Ottawa? Black Mountain above Ottawa. I haven't drank today, I promise. Because they made me the coffee guy. The new guy gets to be the coffee guy. That was somewhere around 6 months, I think. And then you have 30 guys, and they put that little thing, the coffee, up above the hill right there. You're sitting there. You know how long it takes to per coffee at 7,200 feet of altitude? And I'm the new guy. And you got 29 other guys, drunks. Take it also over 15, 20, 25 years, 6 years, 8 years, saying, you are my sunshine, my only sunshine. And I'm like, getting the hell off this mountain, right? But I stay. And I remember doing that fist step with my sponsor. And I remember that feeling that came over me that for once in my life, I've come clean. I told another human being every secret, dark secret that I had. Every secret, stuff that I thought I was going to take to the grave with me, right? I shared it with another human being and God. That feeling that I got there that day, I remember feeling that oneness with God. That same God that I was directed to hit my knees every morning and say, God, would you please give me the willingness to stay sober? May you show me the way to do your will, not mine. How can I be a maximum service to you and to my fellows? And by this time, the change is taking place. I'm saying, God, I'm saying the prayer, and I'm asking for the ones to stay sober. And I'm saying, God, would you please be with Billy? He's going through certain things, trials and tribulations. May you let him accept the situation. May I be able to guide him when he comes over and we read. May I be able to share some of my experience, strength, and hope with him. That's the difference that you make in this alcoholic. See what I'm saying? That's when it started taking place. And I remember that day because it felt like you lifted 1,000,000,000 pounds off of me. Now, I've always been a strong guy. Alcohol just beats the crap out of me. Alcohol beat me into a state of submission when I screamed out and I said, if there is a God, help. I'll never forget that. My last drink was in Mexico. I got as far as the checkpoint. I took my uncle's brand new truck, Bronco, the liar, cheat, and thief. I talked to that girl. You know, I was real good with the mouth and the talking and with the girls. She gave me $2,000. And I was going to come back to the United States and get back all those millions of dollars that the DEA took. And they kicked me out. We don't want your kind here. I was going to come back. I made it to the nearest checkpoint. They took the money. They sent me back. I made it right past Guadalajara. Those of you travel in Mexico, they have checkpoints. And they sent me back. And I remember getting on the side, I don't know, on the side of the road. And I had a bottle of something. And I remember that incomprehensible demoralization because I knew I burned my last bridge. I knew it. And just taking that swig and taking that other swig. And it's just good. But I don't stop at one. I don't stop at two. I stop till it's all gone and I'm up all night. And the next morning I'm looking for it some more because I want to get another one going on. And then I wet my pants. You see? That's my drinking. I need to get sober now. What, I'm going till 13 after? So I go to this meeting. I see the most beautiful looking girl that I've ever seen in AA. My whole 6 months in AA. Her name was Colleen. I didn't have a car. I didn't have a job. And she was going to be my girlfriend. Rocky dropped me off at my house at the Oasis Recovery Home for Women. You guys know the Oasis Recovery Home for Women? This one had all her teeth. I got home after the meeting. I said, Bill, you could just tell when he's not happy with me. Yes, kid. I want you to tell me about love. That's about 10 o'clock at night. He says, love will be the same tomorrow in my office at 9 a.m. And he hung up on me. I called him the next morning at 9 a.m. Bill, I want you to tell me about love. And he laid into me. I think I was sober 6 months. Colleen was sober 3 days right out of Civil Brand. And he said to me that I needed to stay away from her so she got every opportunity that was given to me for a sober way of life, sobriety. And I did. I listened to him for like 3 months. Then I started dating her. Then I married her. I married her. We got married. Two beautiful kids. She gave me a 27-year-old and a 22-year-old. I loved her. And we moved up here. You know, I couldn't get a job because of drugs and all this stuff. God has always worked in my life. You know, I'm doing things. I get a pardon from the governor. I get a job with LA Water and Power. I drag you brush. I say, what do those guys do? The guys are linemen. I become a lineman. I become a supervisor. I do this. I take what you guys teach me in here. I say, we need volunteers to do it. I raise my hand. I'll go do it. You know. We need this. We're going to set poles for the low income down there. We're not going to pay you guys, but we're going to supply material and the power poles and stuff. And people say, we're not going to work unless you pay me. And I'm AA. I'll volunteer. I know how to give to others and expect nothing in return. You see? I started doing that. And my career kept on advancing and advancing. Can you believe they told me when they were going to hire, we don't hire your kind? Can you believe they made me president now? I am president of IBEW Local 18. Can you believe it? 11,000 members. You remember that drunk that came in here that was selling cocaine, 100 kilos of cocaine, doing all this stuff that we're going to get out of here? Can you believe that my mother had to put her house so they didn't deport me? A year and a half ago, I was in the same room as the president of the United States of America. He was up here speaking. I was 15 feet away from him. I go, if they only knew. Only knew, right? Alcoholics Anonymous, God is our anastasia. Coincidence. What is it? I like to call it God. In Alcoholics Anonymous, I understand. It's the only place that I know that gives drunks like us a second chance at life to do something productive. I love calling with everything that I had. I moved up here as an apprentice. I raised my kids here for 18 years. Yeah. I took a cake for 25 years. And then on the side of the road here, I lived in Quartz Hill. PMI was my home group for 18 years. I moved up here when I was sober about 7 or 8 years. Got involved. I come up to the hospital, Palmdale Hospital, with tubes coming out of me, and said, Mr. Lopez, you have brain tumors. I come to and says, what the F I do to you, God? All I work is with just sick kids. Give them my time. Thank you. My money. What'd I do to you? Selfish, self-centered. Within minutes, I'm like, you know, God, you've given me a life that I don't deserve. I've been sober for 25 years. I've got to work every day. Every day. I work with others consistently in and out of my house, taking steps into my backyard. I had a koi pond there. We take steps. Or many, some of you here went there. And we took the steps. And I started trying to make deals with God. I'm a good AA, God. If your work for me here is ready, I'm ready to go. You want to hear God chuckle? Tell him your plans. Little did I know that my wife was going to go to a mental breakdown, that I was not to be there. Little did I know that I was going to bury my father. Little did I know I was going to bury my mother 7 months ago. And little did I know I was going to bury my wife 6 weeks ago. I don't want to drink no matter what. The thought or the obsession to drink is not there. But I know how to get in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous. I started going to meetings every day. Every day I've been going to meetings. I picked up a secretary commitment. I went to work at 3 o'clock this morning. I haven't gone to sleep. I'm here. I got to be at work at 4 o'clock tomorrow. I secretary the 8 a.m. San Fernando group at 8 o'clock tomorrow. I got to go pick up the donuts and take them for the newcomer. See? I don't ever, ever want to drink again. You know? I have two amazing kids. 27-year-old that graduated from Berkeley. This drunk crawling on his belly when AK-47 was able to pay for her school. Her first 2 years of medical school at UC San Francisco. Look that one up. It's a top medical school. Jasenia, my baby, you know. She tells me, Dad, mom's gone. My grandma's gone. Who's going to help me with my babies when I have my babies? I says, I will, mija. Yo te ayudo. You guys taught me that. I don't know how to do that stuff. You do. Where two or more are gathered, they'll be. God, as I understand them, teaches me that. I have a boy that's 22 that lives with me. You know, I live in Old Town Pasadena. I was able to buy a big old flat, you know, and everything that Colleen wanted. Heated marble floors, all every high-end appliance. My career took off. I travel all over the world. I get to speak on my trade. I get to do everything. And I don't want to drink no matter what. Everywhere I go to AA meetings. I'm going to share and I'll close with this. I forgot the speaker's name, Mark, but I promise I'll end it. But Bill told me that if I ever heard anything, Butler was his last name. Butler, you know who I'm talking. Yeah, Wayne. So I was new and I heard this guy speak and say this, right? So I said, man, I'm going to go look, make sure this guy ain't lying to me. And I found it in the 12 and 12. And Bill said, kid, if you ever find anything that you, hear anything that you want in A, give the person credit for it one time and the second time claim it as your own. So this is mine, right? But in the 12 and 12, it talks about the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Where's Ricky at? I love you, Ricky. Ricky gave me a plaque engraved with that, with this. But in the 12 and 12, it talks about the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous being a group of principles that if it's that they're spiritual in their nature, and that if practice is a way of life, can expel the obsession to drink and enable the sufferer, which is you, and me, to become happily, usefully whole. Thank you. Thank you for my life.